Welcome back to The Checkup, our weekly series about how healthcare is changing in Maryland. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be wrapping this series up in 2 weeks on April 15th. Just hours ago, at midnight, the sign-up period to get health insurance this year ended. With the insurance deadline passed and our series winding down, we wanted to check in with a few of the people we've talked to during the past 7 months who considered buying insurance through Maryland's Health Exchange.
I don't know. I recently turned 30. I guess I'm starting to think about the bigger health questions that might come my way, I guess.
That's Aaron Keating. We spoke in August last year. Keating is a mobile DJ who lives in Baltimore. He was part of our conversation about how healthy, young, uninsured Marylanders would decide whether to sign up for insurance. Keating told us the cost of insurance was one of the deciding factors for him. Producer Matt Purdy caught up again with Keating last week. Here's what he said he was looking to pay.
$0. I was hoping to pay as little as I could because I don't need it right now at this exact moment in my life, but it's a smart thing to do if I can afford it.
Keating went on the Maryland Health Connections website in January to see what his options
were. When I went to sign up, it didn't work the way that I hoped it would, but I didn't have any trouble that took me more than, 20 or 30 minutes to kind of work out and get signed up.
He chose a plan he's satisfied with, even though it costs more than $0.
It turned out to be a number that I thought was fairly approachable, and it's a smart thing to do, so I did it. For me right now, I would not say that it really changes my outlook too much. It's something that I know in my head is a good thing, but it doesn't really affect my life, so it doesn't really change. It isn't really changing my mental state or anything.
We spoke with Sherry Casey last September. She had insurance through the Maryland Health Insurance Plan, or MHIP, the state's high-risk pool. She has high blood pressure, which before this year could be considered a pre-existing condition by insurance companies. That was grounds for charging high premiums or denying coverage altogether. In September, she told us she was looking forward to checking out her options on the exchange.
I want to go on to the exchange, see what the plans are, see what the coverage is, and, of course, see what the costs are. And I'm hoping that something will cost less and give me at least what I have now, if not better.
But she had trouble with the exchange's website when she started to sign up last December.
And every time I went on, I had a problem. I couldn't go very far. I was still getting shut out of it. And each time I went on, my account was gone, so I had to start all over. So I got a little frustrated.
Her MHIP coverage had been expected to end this summer. But since many on MHIP, like Casey, weren't able to navigate the online exchange, state officials decided to extend the program for most through the end of the year. By the time Casey was thinking of buying insurance on the exchange earlier this year, she'd already met her deductible on MHIP.
I didn't think it made sense to change right now since I had all these doctor's appointments at the beginning of the first couple months of the year, and I thought I ought to just wait, I guess, at this point.
So she's still on her old insurance. When I asked whether, if the exchange had been working well last fall, she would likely have signed up, she said yes.
Because reading about the plans, they look like the coverage is good. I was just having this discussion at home with my husband about, should I hurry up and do something and do it anyway, even though it's not much different? Or should I just kind of let it kind of play out and see what happens in the fall, which is, I think, what I'm leading towards the next open season when that starts. And at that time, go on and do something.
Sherry Casey, we spoke last week. Here are the latest enrollment numbers. These don't include the folks who signed up yesterday. We won't have a final tally for at least several weeks. 220,000 Marylanders have signed up for Medicaid. Only about 54,000 signed up for private insurance on the exchange. And with me now to talk about the decisions those 54,000 made about health insurance and what insurance options are available or not available for people who did not sign up is Brad Herring, associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Happy to be back.
We just heard from two people who had different experiences navigating the online exchange. One person had a relatively easy time and signed up. The other had a harder time and didn't sign up. How big a factor do you think the glitches in the website were in the number of people who enrolled?
Oh, I think it was a big factor. I mean, so if you look across all the states, first off, you know, most actually had the federal government, healthcare.gov, run their exchanges, but a handful of states, probably about 15, set up their own, and there was pretty wide variation in how successful those states that set up their own were. Some states like California, Connecticut, Kentucky, the IT worked really well, and signups were large early on. And here in Maryland, we definitely struggled with the website being functional for most people. And I think as a result, the actual enrollment numbers are much less than what they'd hoped for.
And what does low enrollment in private insurance mean for the pool of those who are insured?
Yeah, so everybody's really, really focused on the composition of the pool, right? So a lot of attention on the older, sicker people versus the younger, healthier people. And in essence, you really need a balanced pool for everything to kind of work, right? To have affordable premiums for everybody. And I think one of the big concerns with just overall healthcare reform is once you do away the pre-existing conditions, will the healthy people, you know, sit out and wait? And that was kind of the motive behind the individual mandate, the motive behind having this short open enrollment period. But actually the effect of the health insurance website not functioning, I think, is going to wind up probably being pretty important for the following reason. Right. So your first respondent, right? So the person relatively healthy, kind of on the fence, he actually seemed to have like a relatively easy time, you know, mm-hmm. struggled a little bit at first, but actually, you know, kept at it. Right. Someone else who's relatively healthy, who may have had more glitches, had more problems setting up an account, probably relatively likely to give up and say, well, I was on the fence in the first place. Let me not follow through. Contrast that with somebody who maybe has a pre-existing condition, who wasn't actually enrolled in the high-risk pool here in the state, MHIP. So your second person you followed mm-hmm. up with, you know, luckily that they had the MHIP coverage to tide them over. But if you think about someone else who maybe didn't have coverage, had a pre-existing condition like high blood pressure, diabetes, they haven't been able to get coverage. Now they're having these difficulties of signing on and getting onto the website. That's probably a person that's not going to be deterred, right? Mm-hmm, they're going to mm-hmm. keep at it. They're going to keep at it until they finally get coverage. And so if the technical difficulties in and of themselves kind of limit some of the relatively healthier people from enrolling, then that in turn implies that there's a relatively sicker pool for the health insurance plans than they anticipated for 2014.
And that in turn implies what for premiums?
Well, so I mean,
going forward,
yeah. So I mean, in the short term, this is largely something that the health insurance plans just have to eat, right? Because the premiums were set last year, and you know, the people who got into the pool, they're set. But you're right. Like the big question is like, well, what's really going to happen for 2015? So in the summer of this year, 2014, the health insurance carriers are going to have to file their rates for 2015 with the Maryland Insurance Commissioner. And essentially, they're going to be making predictions again about what they think the risk pool will look like for 2015. And if those health insurance carriers are pessimistic about younger, healthier people signing up for 2015, then they're probably going to be charging higher premiums, which in turn kind of have this feedback loop of driving some of those younger, healthier people on the fence out instead of in.
And do you agree with those who say that the surge at the in the last week or so was probably heavily weighted to younger people?
I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, we definitely don't know for sure yet, but all the kind of indications have been that it's the younger, healthier people that tend to wait a little bit, and it was the older, sicker people who had a higher need who were more inclined to get coverage early on.
Could they do another open enrollment between now in November to try to balance the pool?
So I think the short answer is no, right? But with the following caveat, right? So if you missed your opportunity to get coverage by yesterday, there's several caveats in terms of like what things look like for you moving forward for the rest of the year. First off, if you tried to get coverage, but you were unsuccessful, you actually still can follow through with signing up over the next several weeks, maybe month or so. And this is both true for Maryland, but also for the healthcare.gov for the federal government. The thought was, if you're in line, you're gonna be able to stay in line and keep with the process. If you are low income and you're eligible for Medicaid, and a lot of people don't really know what the eligibility cutoffs are, as a general, it's about $30,000 a year in annual income for a family of three, family of four. If you're eligible for Medicaid, you can actually sign up anytime. Yeah. So there isn't this notion of, like, you know, once a year open enrollment period. And then finally, if you have some kind of life event, like, so you get married, you get divorced, you have a kid, that triggers a new open enrollment period, a special enrollment period
for you.
And you'd be able to sign up for coverage.
And again,
for 2014.
The life events that can do that would be having a kid, getting married, changing jobs.
Changing jobs would be one, right? So if you had health insurance through your job and then you lost it because you lost your job, then yeah, that would be, like, considered a life event, and now you're eligible to enroll
on WIP. On WIPR, this is The Checkup on Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Brad Herring, Associate Professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Why is there an enrollment period? Why limit it? Why not, if we want people to be insured, why not just let people sign up anytime, like Medicaid does?
Right. So, I mean, I guess it all kind of goes back to this notion of the new rules allowing people to gain coverage regardless of their pre-existing condition, right? So you don't want to allow people to just wait and enroll anytime, because you're worried that the young, healthy people forego coverage, and that in turn drives up the premiums for the people who have gained coverage. So the main thing that people have talked about in terms of trying to mitigate that or counter that is the individual mandate penalty, right? So if you didn't get coverage by yesterday and you're not eligible to continue to try and get it moving forward, you're going to have to pay a penalty, which is about $95 per adult or 1% of your taxable income, whichever's higher, right? Mm-hmm. So that was one of the big incentives to try and get these younger, healthy people to actually get coverage. And then the second one was essentially this deadline, right? This open enrollment period to say, here's your window of time to gain coverage, with the thought there that the prod or the nudge was to say to people, well, you can't go and get it later on if something happens. And so that ought to kind of push people to try and get it now, because they're essentially nervous about, you know, developing some health need down the road in the year that they then can't cover.
When are we going to know if this whole way of doing insurance is functional?
Yeah, so it's going to be a long process, probably. I mean, I think within the next couple days, we'll get some indications as to, like, what the final enrollments were, what those enrollments were by age, and that'll give us some initial indication as to how the actual enrollment compared to the projected enrollment, and how the pool is at least composed with respect to age. Our next indication will probably be in the summer, when the insurance companies come in and file their rates. And they're certainly going to be higher, because health insurance premiums always increase with general medical inflation. But it's essentially, like, whether they come in with high increases, that's going to give some indication as to whether the insurers have encountered relatively sicker pools than they may have anticipated. And that'll give us some indication as to, like, how things played out now.
I appreciate you talking to us. Thanks,
sure.
Brad.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Brad Herring, Associate Professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We have more episodes of The Checkup on our website, wipr.org/thecheckup. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead, turning stone into news. Stay with us on 88.1.